We're going to start with the upset stomach exercise that we did last time. And I wanted to talk about the calculations in a way that's not discussed in the text, because I wanted to talk about what neutralization reactions or titration experiments normally involve. So if you recall what we did, we started out with a solution of hydrochloric acid, which was supposed to be mimicking the environment of the stomach. And then we crushed up an antacid tablet to add to that hydrochloric acid, which neutralized a portion of the hydrochloric acid. Then we neutralized the remaining amount of the hydrochloric acid using sodium hydroxide. So a titration experiment in general is designed to be able to determine the amount of acid in a sample if you're using a base to test with, or the amount of base in a sample if you're using an acid to test with. So if you can remember what the term neutralized means, that means to have equal moles of acid and base reacting. So if we start with that idea, that neutralized is when the moles of acid is equal to the moles of base, well, then we modify that a bit for the fact that we have solutions that we're using. So we're not measuring out a solid and directly converting from a solid into moles. We're going to be using molarity. And if you remember the definition of molarity, that's moles of solute versus liters of solution, which means if you multiply by the liters of solution that you used, you are going to get moles. So we can replace this with the moles of acid, or sorry, the molarity of acid times the volume of the acid used. And that would be equal to the molarity of the base times the volume of base used. So if we've got an equation like this with four variables in it, we can solve it if we know three of the variables. So in this experiment, we start out with sodium hydroxide that has a known concentration to it. It's 0.5 molar. And we happen to know what the concentration of the acid is in this case as well. So we know molarity of acid, we know the molarity of base, and we measured out how much sodium hydroxide we ended up adding to the flask, which means we know the volume of the base. And so the only thing that we have to solve for then is the volume of the acid that's present. Now, in a more traditional experiment, it would be a little bit different, the things that we know and the things that we don't know. So a more traditional titration experiment is this, that you have an acid of unknown concentration. And suppose you're trying to analyze that sample. Well, still using a burette, you could measure out the volume of that sample that's present. You would measure out the volume of base that you use to test against it. You'd have the concentration of the base that you'd know, which means that you'd know three of the variables, and the last one would be the one you're solving for, which would be for the molarity of the acid. So this is the expression that would normally be used in a titration experiment. But in this case, since the molarity of the acid is equal to the molarity of the base, and we know both of those values, then we can jump directly to volume. In other words, the volume of the base that we added is automatically going to be equal to the volume of the acid that was present. And it turns out in this case, the calculations, we're not trying to determine moles or anything like that. The final answer that we're getting is how many milliliters of the acid did each gram of the antacid neutralize. So if we had the hydrochloric acid that we started with, and a portion of that was reacted with the antacid, then the leftover is what the sodium hydroxide reacted with. So if we subtract out how much the sodium hydroxide reacted with, that will leave us with how much the antacid ended up neutralizing, which is what we're trying to determine. So the calculations are actually pretty simple, but let's just review them really quickly then. If you've got your lab notebooks and you turn to page 117, the one thing that people kept having confusion over was this listing of initial volume and final volume. So the way that that's labeled makes it sound like that the first entry, the initial volume, is supposed to be how much did you use, and that second entry is supposed to be how much did you end up with, or something like that. Which, that's not the way that we use burettes in measurement. If you recall, when you fill the burette up, based off the burettes that we used, that top marking was the zero mark. And you don't do any mental math to say, oh, that's really 25 milliliters in the burette. The way that you use the burette is you fill it up and then simply mark down whatever the level was on the side. So that initial volume reading for the first time you use the burette should actually be 0 milliliters. Then, of course, we used a burette that was smaller than what was called for in the lab procedure. So we ended up filling it up twice. The first time we filled it up to zero, emptied it down to 25. That means zero was your initial volume, what the burette reading initially was. Your final volume was 25, where the burette level ended up with. And if you subtract one from the other, then you get how much was really used. So that's what items 3, 4, and 5 are on that first page. 3 is where did the burette get filled up to first, 4 is where did it end up, and 5 is the difference between the two. How much liquid did you really use? Now, because we used a burette that was smaller than what was called for, you had 2 entries on each item 3 and item 4. So then you would subtract twice. You'd take your final volume the first time, subtract out the final volume the first time. That should give you 25 milliliters, because that's what I recommended that you do. Then most likely you filled up to the 20 milliliter mark the second time, emptied down to the 25 milliliter mark. So the second time around, 20 was your initial volume, 25 was your final volume, and that means the volume actually used was 5. So you should have gotten a value near 30, because that was the amount we were supposed to use, 30 in total for number 5. Now, this section ended up testing 2 different antacids. The other section only tested 1 antacid, but did it twice. But that means that for both sections, you ended up with data only for 2 of the columns, antacid 1 and antacid 2, which is fine. So you ended up with the final volume of sodium hydroxide used in item 5, which we'll use that again in a little bit. Now, as far as the tablet, the problem with the tablet is once we crushed it up, some of it ended up not being transferred because some of it stuck to either the mortar and pestle, or it stuck to the weighing paper itself. So what you had done is you had crushed up the tablet, put it on a piece of weighing paper, and got that combined mass of the weighing paper and the tablet. Then you transferred as much of the powder as you could into the Erlenmeyer and then measured the mass of the paper again. The difference between the two would be how much of the tablet actually made it into the Erlenmeyer flask. So that's the other value that we're going to need. So 6 would have been the mass of the dish plus the antacid. Well, not dish, we used a paper instead. 7 would be the mass of the mostly empty paper, and then 8 would therefore be the mass of how much did you actually use. So then turning to the next page, that's where you finished off the experiment by adding the sodium hydroxide. So same thing with items 1, 2, and 3 on that next page. 1 would have been where did you fill the burette up to initially. 2 is where did the burette end up at the end of your titration. And then if you took the difference between the two, then that item 3 is how much sodium hydroxide did you actually use. So then the final calculation is this. If you have the volume of sodium hydroxide was used, and if the concentration of hydroxide was equal to the hydrochloric acid, which it was, then if we subtract the volume of hydroxide used from the total volume of the hydrochloric acid, the difference between the two is the volume of hydrochloric acid neutralized by the antacid tablet. So item 4, it says volume of acid neutralized by sodium hydroxide. That's actually equal to item 3, again, because the concentrations are the same. And if you look at the equation that I've got in the notes, we can understand that, because if you have these 4 variables, and the molarity of acid is the same as the molarity of the base, That's why we can make this equivalency between the volume of the acid and the volume of the base. So item 4 is just the same value as item 3 on that second page. And then if you take the original volume of HCl used, so that's item 5 from the previous page, and you subtract out item 4 on the second page, how much sodium hydroxide neutralized the acid, that difference between the two is the volume of acid that was neutralized by the antacid tablet. So that's item 5 on the second page. What we were supposedly doing is trying to find out how good the antacid tablets were, which one was more effective on a per gram basis. So the last item is to take item 5 on the second page, that's the volume of hydrochloric acid neutralized by the tablet, and then you divide that by the mass of the tablet. And so that will give you essentially the effective strength of the antacid. It'll tell you how many milliliters of the HCl were neutralized per gram of the antacid tablet. So if you did complete the experiment last time, you've got plenty of time to fill this out today. The experiment today will not take the whole lab period. So if you just wanted to be done with it, you can fill out the rest of the worksheet and turn it in today if you'd like. Or if you'd rather work on it later, turn it in next time, that's fine too. But did anybody have any questions about the calculations for this past experiment? Then let's flip over to talking about the experiment we're supposed to be doing today. And that's experiment 13, which starts on page 91. And what we're essentially doing is an extraction experiment. So extraction is where you use a solvent of some sort to remove some kind of material from a mixture. So there's different kinds of extractions that may be done. Commonly, if you have something that is isolated from a plant-based source, if it's some kind of medication or some type of other plant-based substance that you're trying to isolate, you might take a variety of organic, meaning carbon-based solvents, to target those compounds and remove them from the plant material. In this case, what we're going to be doing is using a solvent to remove the fat from potato chips. And we're going to see if we can match the percentage of fat that's actually printed on the potato chip packages themselves. The solvent that we're going to be using is called petroleum ether, which is not the same thing as the ether that we've talked about in lecture. So if you might remember, ether is a form of a functional group. It's one where you have an oxygen that has carbons attached on either side of that oxygen. And ether is a very common lab solvent. But petroleum ether, it's got that name because it has the ability to evaporate very easily like many ethers do. But petroleum ether is usually a mixture of hydrocarbons. So if you have hexane, which hex means six, ane means it's a compound that only has single bonds in it. So hexane is a compound that has six carbons all in a row with a bunch of hydrogens attached. That is a solvent that easily dissolves other organic materials, and the solvent evaporates fairly easily. So petroleum ether is a mixture of those kinds of compounds, and it will very easily isolate the fat from the potato chips. Then what's going to happen is we'll transfer just the liquid portion, what had extracted out the fat, and we're going to evaporate the solvent off again, which will leave behind the fat as a residue. So what you're going to do essentially is to measure out a sample of potato chips. You'll extract out the fat using this petroleum ether. Then you'll evaporate the ether and get the mass of the fat that came from the potato chips. So if you have that mass of the fat versus the original mass of the potato chips, you can come up with what the percentage of fat's supposed to be in those potato chips. So let me just walk through the procedure to explain what you're going to be doing. You do have two different types of potato chips you're going to be using, so you'll be doing the experiment twice. One will be for regular potato chips. One will be for what's referred to as reduced fat. And we're going to see if there's actually much difference between the two. You'll take an empty Erlenmeyer flask and get the mass of that flask, because later on you'll transfer the extracted fat to that to do the evaporation. So once the evaporation's done, it's tedious or difficult to scrape the fat out. So instead of trying to isolate the fat and measuring it like a solid, all we're going to do is evaporate that mixture in the Erlenmeyer flask. It'll be stuck to the sides of the flask. And if we get that total mass of the fat and the flask, we can always just subtract out the flask itself, and that will leave us the mass of the fat. So that's what we're going to be doing. So the first part is that you get a clean Erlenmeyer flask, measure the mass of it. Then you're supposed to get a sample of potato chips and crush them up. Out of that sample, you're going to measure out about half a gram of potato chips and put it into a test tube. And then you're going to add 3 milliliters of petroleum ether to the test tube. You then want to stopper the test tube because you want to shake up that ether to try to get it to interact with the potato chips as much as possible so we can get an efficient extraction of that fat. It does say to periodically take off the stopper because since it is a solvent, the petroleum ether, that can evaporate easily. As you're shaking it around, some of it might evaporate and build up pressure. So you take off the stopper occasionally just to make sure you vent any pressure that might be developed. Once you do that, you let the liquid settle down to the bottom of the test tube, and then you remove that and transfer it with a pipette into the Erlenmeyer flask. So you don't want to transfer any solids along because all you're trying to do is isolate out the fat. Then you repeat that process where you're going to take another 3 milliliters of the petroleum ether, add it to the same sample of potato chips again to try to extract out fat. The reason for that is mathematically it turns out it's more efficient if you do an extraction a few times in a row with a small quantity of solvent than trying to do an extraction once with a large quantity. So in other words, the fact that we're using 3 milliliters twice separately, we're going to get more out in terms of fat than if we had used 6 milliliters of the solvent but only did it once. So you take the fresh 3 milliliters of petroleum ether, add it to the same potato chips, stopper it, mix it up again, and then again you're going to isolate just the liquid from that, leaving the potato chips behind. And you're going to transfer that liquid to the same Erlenmeyer flask. Then what you're going to be doing is an indirect heating. You're going to have the flask, which you'll then put into a beaker that's filled with water. Now, in this case, it says add about 25 milliliters of water to a 100 milliliter beaker. But we have larger Erlenmeyers and larger beakers that we're using. So I believe it's a 600 milliliter beaker we're using instead, so you'll want to add about 100 milliliters of water. We do that indirect heating just so there's no chance that we somehow scorch the fat by heating it up too much. We heat the water in a beaker, we'll have the Erlenmeyer inside the beaker, and then that way you've indirectly heated up the sample. Now, it looks like that we were maybe a little bit too cautious in the other section when we evaporated off the ether, because what we ended up finding out is that there was a much larger amount of fat that we extracted versus what was stated on the packages. And I think I realized the reason the results came out that way is maybe we didn't fully evaporate the ether enough. So as you evaporate the sample, the liquid will probably appear to get thicker and thicker, and then you'll end up with what looks like sort of a sticky residue on the Erlenmeyer. You might want to heat for a little bit longer to really make sure that all the solvent's been driven away. And then once the solvent's been driven away, the other thing that may have happened is that if the outside of your Erlenmeyer flask was wet, you want to make sure you dry it off before you measure the mass, because that water would add to the mass that you measure and throw off your determination of how much fat was present. So once you take it out of the water bath, make sure to dry it off, and then you'll measure the mass of the flask again. So you had the flask originally before you put any fat in it, then you have the flask after you've evaporated off the solvent, which means you'll have the fat in it, and the difference between the two will be the amount of fat that you isolated. So that whole experiment you're going to repeat once, well, twice total. So you do it once for the regular potato chips and then one for the reduced fat potato chips. So let's review the data sheet that's on the next page there. So you have the mass of the empty Erlenmeyer flask, the mass of the crushed chips, which remember, you're not going to use the whole sample that you crush up. You're only going to use half a gram. And this is probably something that's beyond obvious, but I just need to say it, that these potato chips have been sitting around in the lab for forever. So they're probably expired, way expired, and even if they're not, they've been sitting in a chemical environment where they might absorb solvents that have evaporated in the room. So just in case anybody didn't have their breakfast this morning, I would not recommend at all munching on any of the potato chips. So you crush up the potato chips, then you'll take about half a gram of sample. That'll be the item two there. Then the item three is the mass of the Erlenmeyer flask plus the fat. That's the result that you're going to get after you do the evaporation and measure the mass of the flask again. And so the difference between items one and three, so three minus one, that's going to give you the amount of fat that was in the sample. Then, if you take the mass of fat, which you determined, that's item four, and divide it by the mass of the chips that you started with, item two, that'll give you a ratio of how much fat was in those potato chips, which if you multiply that by 100%, then you'll get the mass percentage of fat in the chips, item five that's there. So that's the value that you're trying to determine. Now, on the packaging, you can find out what the size of a sample, one serving size of the potato chip's going to be. And then it will also say on there somewhere what the total mass of the fat should be in the potato chips. And same thing, if you take item seven, the mass of the fat, as reported on the packaging, and to divide it by mass item six, you'll get the mass of fat that's supposed to be in the potato chips. Now, that's not the same as the percentage on the package itself, because those percentages are based off of the percent of fat that's supposed to be in your daily diet. It's not representing the percentage of fat in the chip. So that's why we have to calculate it our own selves. So then you'll have a percentage of what it's supposed to be, the amount of fat. And then earlier you have the percentage that you determined. So if you take, and it's listed here how to do this, if you take the percentage in item five, that's the percentage you calculated, and divide it by the percentage that's supposed to be in the chips, that's item eight, that ratio will tell you how good was your extraction. Did you get out 100% of the fat? So if you take the ratio of item five, divided by item 8, and then multiply it by 100%, that will give you the efficiency of the extraction, which it shouldn't be possible to get more than 100%. But like I mentioned earlier, that was happening in the other section, and I think, again, I think it's because of two reasons. One, we might not have been aggressively heating off the solvent enough. And of course, if any solvent was left over stuck to the fat, that's going to affect the mass of the fat that you measure. Or, like I said, maybe that the flasks weren't completely dried when we measured them again, which would also affect the results. So you don't need to worry about any of the questions that are on the following page. You only need to worry about these calculations. So you will easily finish this experiment before the class is over. So again, if you wanted to be done with the calculations, you can go ahead and turn those in today. Or if you'd rather, you could turn them in next time as well. As far as any hazards for the lab, the petroleum ether is safe as long as you don't drink it. It does evaporate very quickly, so if you get it on you, it will probably evaporate within just a few seconds. You might want to wash your hands off, but there shouldn't be any negative reaction that would happen if you get it on you. Then because we're just using potato chips and because all the solvent's going to evaporate, you can dispose of both the leftover potato chips and the fat just in a trash can, because there's really going to be no leftover chemical residue once you're done. Then when you are done with the experiment, if you could just clean up your glassware and put it back where you got it originally. Everything that you are going to need should be right over here in the front of the classroom. Does anyone have any questions about what you're supposed to be doing? All right, let's go ahead and get to work then.